The following program is being brought to you on the Green Talk Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit thegreentalknetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Green Economy News, brought to you by FD Element with Don Miller and Grant Draper. This fast-paced hour is designed to keep you on the pulse of what's going on in sustainable business and advocacy. Now, here are your hosts, Don Miller and Grant Draper.
Hello, this is Don Miller.
And I'm Grant Draper.
I'm Cheryl Mahallan.
And I'm Dan Giacomini.
We're all part of the FD Element team. Thanks for joining us this week here on Green Economy News. During this program, we'll be introducing you to a myriad of new technologies, business themes, and green policies that are impacting the business world and the environment right now today.
And as usual, FD Element is on the cutting edge, and we're broadcasting on Voice of America, the largest online talk radio network in the world.
And since we're broadcasting all over the Internet, we wanted to just remind folks that if what we're talking about here has whet your appetite for some additional information, definitely be sure to check out our website at fdelement.com, as well as our blog and newsline head service at mygreenelement.com. There you can find tons of great articles, videos, links, as well as a weekly blog roundup of what's going on in the green business world.
So without further ado, let's launch right into the program. Last week we were talking to Carbon Offsetters COO Donovan Woolard and green marketing branding expert author Richard C. Rene.
This week we're going back into the carbon trading world and talking to EcoSecurity CEO Bruce Usher. Bruce has an enormous amount of experience in the trading world, having previously worked for Lehman Brothers as a derivatives trader in Asia. In addition to his business experience for the last 2 years, he's been teaching a course on finance and sustainability at Columbia University in New York, which Grant attended to get a master, an MBA. We'll also be chatting with Timothy Thielen Lawton, and he's a global warming advocate at Environment America. Now let's get the show going with FD Element, Cheryl and Dan, with our green news headlines for the week.
Thank you, Don. According to prominent Canadian lawyer Simon Potter, California's landmark low-carbon fuel rules may be a violation of NAFTA and the World Trade Organization provisions. Potter alleges that the new restrictions would unfairly limit exports of crude from Canada's oil sands to the state. California adopted a first-ever rule Thursday requiring refineries, producers, and importers of motor fuels sold in the state to reduce the carbon intensity of their products by 10% by 2020, with greater cuts thereafter. The measures to slash such emissions would force refiners to consider the carbon footprint of the fuels they produce, a potential blow to synthetic crude upgraded from Alberta's oil sands, whose production emits more carbon dioxide than conventional oil.
And city infrastructure, from transit to recreation, is the focus of two new greening initiatives announced last week. The National Council of Black Mayors unveiled a comprehensive plan to, quote-unquote, green the city. In addition to applying technologies like those up for funding from the federal government, there are two other main strategies for the program: creating green-collar jobs and training programs, and expanding energy production from biomass sources. The new Green the City plan will put its three-pronged strategy to work across the cityscape and will include creating and expanding park systems, green housing and offices, energy efficiency, recycling, and partnering with local colleges and universities to train a workforce and to help speed this transition. The group estimates that these programs can't help meet or exceed President Obama's goal of creating 3.5 million new green jobs.
BMW is finally getting on the green wagon. For years, the company resisted building hybrid cars, believing that more efficient gasoline and diesel models were a smarter bet. But as the hybrid gives way to the all-electric vehicle, at least in the eyes of optimists, the German automaker aims to be at the front of the pack. BMW is spending more than $1 billion to develop a small car for urban drivers that will include an electric-powered provision. BMW is working on the electric vehicle under an initiative called Project I. The firm is also considering creating a new brand for the high-end city cars, in addition to the company's current BMW, Mini, and Rolls-Royce nameplates. To gauge interest and test the concept in New York and Los Angeles, BMW is leasing 500 mini sedans that have been modified to run on batteries.
And Scottish Power, a unit of Spain's Iberdrola, said on Sunday its Whitley Wind Farm near Glasgow is to be completed ahead of schedule and in the next few weeks. It will be Europe's largest onshore wind farm. Scottish Power Renewables said all of the 140 turbines at the farm would be ready in the near future, raising its capacity to 322 megawatts, enough to power more than 180,000 homes. The company began working on the project 10 years ago, with planning consent awarded in 2006. Its first turbine started generating power in January of last year. It covers an area of 55 square kilometers.
That's it for this week's news headlines. As always, if you're interested in finding out about the very news headlines, check out our company blog at mygreenelement.com. Now back to you, Don.
Sorry about that. Thanks, Dan. Our first guest today is Bruce Usher. Bruce joined Eco Securities in 2003 as chief executive officer, and since then has been responsible for the overall strategic development of the company. He's got years of trading experience under his belt, having worked at a number of investment banks, including Williams Capital Group and Lehman Brothers. For the last two years, as I mentioned earlier, he's taught a course on finance and sustainability at Columbia University, and will be teaching it again this fall. Bruce is also Columbia University's representative to the United Nations Global Compact Initiative on integrating sustainability into equity research. Bruce, thanks so much for joining us today.
Don, I think Bruce, we just had Bruce on the line, and we lost him. So let us, as we try to get that back up, perhaps we can just take an interim and shift over to Hollywood Goes Green, Cheryl.
Absolutely. And first up for the news, sorry, just give me 1 second here, Grant. Waiting for Bruce. Okay, so back in May of last year, Jennifer Aniston let it be known that she was planning on making her new pad in Malibu as eco-friendly as possible. And now, thanks to some new aerial photos from Splash, it's clear that she has followed through. The pictures show two separate solar arrays on a full metal roof, which is excellent at reflecting sunlight and reducing cooling costs. It also appears that even some of the chimney covers have solar cells embedded. The home was supposedly built with recycled and organic materials, as well as extensive water-conserving landscaping. In total, the project is estimated to have cost somewhere around $15 million. Way to go, Jennifer. And up north, news just broke out that Wyclef Jean will be performing at the Green Garden Gala today. The gala is Health Corps' annual fundraiser to raise cash and expand their in-school health educational and mentoring program. You can expect tons of celebrity faces, including a very special presentation by Quincy Jones, as he gives away the first annual Health Corps Music for a Better Life Award. The event will take place at the World Financial Center, and tickets will cost around $1,000 each. And that's it for now. I'm Cheryl Mahal, and that was your Hollywood Goes Green update. And back to you, Don.
Thanks a lot, Cheryl. We are still waiting for Bruce to join us here on the line. And I think what's interesting, though, is, you know, this whole carbon pricing update, this whole carbon pricing issue coming to the fore again and again in so many different ways. What I'd like to do now, though, is just cut to a commercial break, and we'll track Bruce down and be right back after this.
Eco-conscious trends and lifestyles. You're listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
Where can you discuss environmental, ethical, and economic issues with the leading thinkers on these topics? Join host Shane Snipes for One Greener Radio. This program will spotlight key areas such as social impact and environmental ideas, as well as social entrepreneurship. Come on board for lively and engaging discussions with Shane and his experts. One Greener Radio promises to keep you thinking and brainstorming for more. One Greener Radio is broadcast live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Green Talk Network.
FD Element helps clients use communications to seize emerging opportunities in sustainability and issue advocacy. We do it through the power of creative, integrated communication efforts built on decades of experience helping clients win in a changing world.
More than ever, companies are understanding the business case for sustainability as a way to cut costs, increase market share, limit risk, and improve employee alignment. FD Element has helped some of North America's leading brands do just that. Working from offices in New York, Vancouver, and Washington, D.C., FD Element develops customized campaigns grounded in unmatched thought leadership and executed with sound strategy, clear messages, and high-impact communication. To learn more, visit www.fdelement.com. That's www.fdelement.com for the best communication services for businesses with an eye on the advantages of sustainability.
Hey, kid. Over here, inside your radio. Name's Ralph. I'm an energy hog. Hey, if you're going to waste energy in your home, I'm going to pig out on it. Anyway, I got a deal for you. There's this new website called energyhog.org. Forget about it. It teaches kids how to get rid of us energy hogs. So you promise not to log on to energyhog.org, and I promise not to eat your radio. Deal?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
What can you tell me about SkillsUSA?
SkillsUSA teaches you employability skills. So you know how to deal with people, you have teamwork, your resume is going to look awesome.
Well, it's important to know your technical skills, but not only that, to have soft skills, the skills of learning how to communicate with people.
SkillsUSA.
On the web at SkillsUSA.org.
I am stuffed.
After that meal, I have got to pass gas.
Powder room's right there.
No! Daddy's gas can kill us all!
That's right. Toxic clouds like the one I'm about to unleash could make everyone deathly ill. Be right back.
Secondhand smoke contains hydrogen cyanide and other deadly gases.
What a guy.
Oh, he is a keeper.
Don't pass gas. Take it outside. Get the facts at don'tpassgas.org. A message from the Ad Council and the American Legacy Foundation.
Are you thinking green? Want to become a host expert on the Green Talk Network? Contact Jeff Spinard, president of our internet radio division, at 480-294-6417. That's 480-294-6417. Or click on How to Become a Host on our homepage. You're listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You're listening to Green Economy News, brought to you by FD Element, with Don Miller and Grant Draper. If you have a question or comment about this week's program, call in now, toll-free at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. Or send an email to dan at theelementagency.com. Now, back to Green Economy News, brought to you by FD Element.
Welcome back, everyone. Now we're back with Dan Giacomini, who's going to give you our climate change update.
Thanks very much, Grant. A new report released by the Asian Development Bank says that Southeast Asia is particularly vulnerable to the effects of climate change, affecting Southeast Asians' families, food supplies, agricultural production, and general financial prosperity. If left unchecked, the report also found that the total cost of lost agricultural production and other negative impacts from climate change would be equivalent to as much as 6.7% of the gross domestic product in major Southeast Asian countries by the end of this century, more than double the 2.6% loss estimated for the world as a whole. It also found that rice yields would decline by as much as 34% in Indonesia and 75% in the Philippines, while in Thailand and Vietnam, among the world's biggest exporters of the food, would also experience declines. In addition to economic hardships, mass migrations will take place throughout the region. The study says greenhouse gas emissions could raise temperatures in Southeast Asia several degrees Celsius, and by doing so, would melt glaciers, raise sea levels, and threaten 80% of Southeast Asians who live within 100 kilometers of the coast. According to the Asia Development Bank, the threat is made all the worse by the fact that Southeast Asia's greenhouse gas emissions are relatively low compared to the other parts of the world, with most being caused by deforestation. The bank, whose goal is poverty alleviation, says more investment is needed to lessen the damage caused by rising temperatures. I'm Dan Giacomini, and this has been your Climate Change Update.
Thanks, Dan. Our next guest is Tim Tillene Lawton. Tim has worked for several years at the Frontier Group and previously worked on President Obama's successful presidential campaign, where, as we know, green economics and climate change issues played a really prominent role. Recently, he's joined the staff of Environment America as their global warming advocate. Tim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Grant, do you want to start off the interview here? Well, why don't I do that? Can you tell us a little bit about what you and your organization do?
Yeah, definitely. So I am, as you said, a global warming advocate with Environment America. And Environment America is a federation of 28 state environmental groups that use grassroots action to fight for clean energy, stopping global warming, and other issues. So we use the support we have in states to push for strong environmental laws for the whole country. And basically by bringing the public's voice to Washington, we're able to take on big polluters like oil and coal companies that are lobbying against us.
So what would distinguish you folks from some of the other players, such as the Natural Resources Defense Council or the League of Conservation Voters? What's kind of your niche in the green world?
Right. Well, our biggest niche is that we work so much and focus on the state level, and so we have 28 different groups, whether it's Environment California or Environment Virginia, where we do most of our work. And then our D.C. chapter is really just to represent the Federation on national policies, like the global warming bill that's happening right now. But we really focus on the grassroots level and in getting state-level policies passed that we can then pass on to other states and eventually bring up to the national level.
So state-level policies on climate specifically, you know, such as AB 32 in California, or
absolutely, we were part of that fight, not just climate, but also cleaner air, clean water, open spaces, any environmental issue where the public has a big stake in the fight.
What are some of the interesting things going on at the state level right now?
Well, at the state level, we're seeing clean cars programs, which we helped pass in California, that have been passed now in 13 other states across the country. You might have heard that the EPA is recently reconsidering granting California the waiver to move forward with those programs. We're also seeing clean energy standards for renewable energies like wind and solar power, and we've been able to help pass those in a bunch of different states as well, and we're also working now at the national level to get those passed here in D.C. along with a global warming bill. And then, of course, as you mentioned, AB 32 was the nation's first statewide global warming pollution cap, and we've been helping other states get those passed as well.
Interesting. And so let's I guess shift gears to the big news of the day, which is in Washington, and is Congressman Waxman's bill, you know, which is the first one of a couple of potential bills dealing with climate, specifically bringing in carbon pricing through a cap and trade system. What's your assessment of kind of where things are at for people who may not be following it day to day?
Right. Well, the big news is that the first votes are scheduled to happen next week. So that means right now there are a lot of talks going on. Environmental groups like ours, as well as opposition like the oil companies and coal companies, are lobbying hard on this issue to make sure, and we're fighting hard to make sure that we get strong clean energy standards and that we get the support we need to pass this bill. But you know, I'm overall optimistic generally, and I'll tell you why. One reason is that we already have the technologies we need to solve this problem. For example, the wind that blows over the Great Plains states is more than enough to generate electricity for the entire country. The same is true for solar power with a square in our desert the size of 90 miles on the side. And so we have these technologies. We just need to get our elected officials to decide to use them. And, of course, one big change in the political layout is that President Obama actually gets this, which is different from the president we had for the last 8 years. And so that's part of the reason that Americans elected him in November. But he and the other leaders of Congress can't do it alone. And so that's why we really have a work cut out for us to stand up to the oil companies and coal industry that's been spending hundreds of million dollars on ad campaigns and lobbying.
Well, this is it, and I guess so you guys, it's a bit of a David and Goliath situation. Is that right?
Yeah, and of course, that's always a big challenge that we that we fight against is that, you know, money is power in a lot of ways,
especially
in Washington.
Purdue,
and Armin America definitely doesn't have a lot of money. But the thing we do have is the support of the vast majority of the American public. And so the way that we can actually win against those odds is by mobilizing that support and really making sure that the public voice is getting heard and generating a lot of attention on the issue. And that's really a powerful tool.
What ways could our listeners learn more about how they could become part of the mobilization efforts for next week?
Yeah, well, if our website, environmentamerica.org, is one place where we have different ways for people that are online to get involved in the action. We also have we've been asking people to submit comments to their representatives and their senators to make sure that they're doing all that they can to help support this bill get it passed and keep strong strong clean energy standards, whether it's renewable electricity or energy efficiency. And so, you know, even for some people might be in really, you know, in key areas where there's representatives that haven't decided which way they're going to vote yet, and that's sort of the most valuable. But even other people from other areas, if they can get their representatives to pay enough attention to this to help convince those undecided people, then that is a big help as well.
Tim, this is Dan Giacomini. I have a quick question for you. I want to go back a little bit to a point that you made earlier, that the wind potential in the Midwest is enough to power the whole country. Is that base load power? Is that really the case for these renewables? I mean, I was always under the impression that they were, you know, reliable to an extent, but just that base load potential just wasn't there.
That's a great question. So the factoid that there's enough wind in the Midwest is enough to power the country, that's clearly not what will actually happen, nor what we really advocate for doing is powering everything, all electronic things from the Midwest, and not the least of which problem is you'd need transmission lines from the Midwest all the way down to Florida or whatever when they have their own renewable potential. But in terms of base load, actually the more, there was a study that came out of Stanford a couple years ago that showed that the more renewables such as wind or solar or other ones that are intermittent, as they call them, that you use on the same grid, the more similar the production looks to a baseload power. Because basically what happens is, sure, the wind turbines are generating the most electricity when the wind's blowing the hardest, and solar is producing the most electricity when the sun's shining the hardest. But then if you average out all that over a large grid, then it ends up filling in the gaps and averaging out.
Mm.
Now, in the transition, as we, you know, shift over to more renewables, you'll of course need to have you'll have to be able to fill in the gaps in some cases. And there's different ways to do that. You can actually do that with renewable electricity as well, with things like concentrated solar power, which is a technology that uses mirrors to focus the heat from the sun onto one turbine, and you can actually store that heat energy in the form of liquid salt or molten salt for a really long time at a high efficiency. And so you can actually generate baseload power from renewable energy as well. Also from geothermal energy is another way to do that.
So I'm speaking to you today from Vancouver, where FD Element has an office, and we're up here in British Columbia, where we've got a provincial election going on. So that's similar to a state level election. We have a government here, the Liberal Party government, that brought in a carbon tax about a year and a half ago that was, you know, it's considered quite unpopular. And so what's happened is the party actually to the left of them, the New Democratic Party, the Social Democratic Party, is running a campaign basically that features as one of its key items attacking the carbon tax. Mm-hmm. I guess my question to you is, do you folks have any preference between a carbon tax or a cap and trade system, or do you see them working hand in glove like a lot of people do?
Yeah, I would say that our organization sees either of those as, if they're politically feasible, then they could be valuable tools to actually, you know, cut global warming pollution and increase investment in clean energy, which I think is another part of the whole puzzle that needs to be considered. So, you know, in the United States, cap and trade is a lot more politically feasible, a lot more likely to pass. And, in fact, our opposition here will say anything it can to prevent the bill from passing, and so they're calling it a tax because it makes it less popular.
Yeah.
You know, in reality, you know, anything that will help cut global warming pollution, you know, that puts the right price on carbon, and that also is making sure that we invest in the new clean energy technologies so that we can create more jobs and all that is something that we would support.
And so I guess my question is, what's your biggest concern then? You've mentioned that, some of the fossil fuel industries are obviously crusading against Congressman Waxman's bill. What's your biggest concern?
I mean, the biggest concern is that it doesn't get passed, right?
Yeah, right.
Scientists have made it clear that we really need to make steep reductions, and we need to make them soon if we're going to have a chance at avoiding the most catastrophic effects of global warming. And so the great thing about this bill is it does represent the science in terms of reflecting targets that IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, set out for world policymakers in 2007. And so we're really happy to see those targets, and we want to make sure those get passed. The other fear is that even if those targets stay in place, that the fossil fuel industries will successfully undermine the renewable electricity standard, which says that we should get 25% of our electricity from renewable sources like wind, solar, geothermal. And that's a great way to help speed the transition and create green energy jobs. And so that would be our sort of secondary fear, is that they weaken that or try to include fuels that aren't really renewable, like coal.
I think coal, we can all agree, wouldn't qualify as renewable
they're using
power.
I would hope so, but they've been spending hundreds of millions of dollars trying to convince people that there's such a thing as clean coal, which doesn't really exist. And so it's been tough to try to fight that battle. A lot of the key representatives are from coal districts, and so districts that generate a lot of coal. And so it's understandably a tough fight. We have to show them that the people in their districts still support clean energy standards and realize that it'll be a good thing despite that.
And I guess the new thing that's come into the debate, I think, probably as a function of the declining economy, is really the whole idea of a jobs, the whole jobs angle on the environmental discussion, right?
Right. So everything in politics right now is all about the economy and jobs because of the whole global economic meltdown. And so fortunately, that really changes shifts the playing field. But because a clean energy economy would create jobs, it's not, it doesn't necessarily make it better or worse for us. It just makes it a different fight. It means that really when we're reaching out to people, we have to show them what kind of jobs it'll create. And it will create a lot of jobs. And so it's a matter of convincing people of that. And our opposition is trying to say the opposite. So
trying to obscure the issue. Well, here is what we're going to do. We're going to go to a break here. But I'd like to ask you around, Tim, and we ask you to stay around, Tim, and we'll finish up the interview after the break. This is Tim Talene Lawton, who's joining us from Environment America, which is one of the leading environmental groups in the United States, working, as Tim said, in 28 different states.
Are you thinking green? Want to become a host expert on the Green Talk Network? Contact Jeff Spinard, president of our Internet Radio Division, at 480-294-6417. That's 480-294-6417. Or click on How to Become a Host on our homepage. You're listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green. You're invited to the cafe, but this is no ordinary cafe. This is the Living Shelter Cafe. Come inside. Architect and speaker Terry K. Phelan is your host at her table every week. You'll learn about ecological innovations for sustainable homes and communities, learn about remodeling with healthy materials, tapping nature for heating and cooling solutions, and overall making healthier decisions to help preserve the fragile ecosystem that supports us all. Join Terry every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, for the Living Shelter Cafe on the Green Talk Network.
I am stuffed.
After that meal, I have got to pass gas.
Powder room's right there.
No! Daddy's gas can kill us all!
That's right. Toxic clouds like the one I'm about to unleash could make everyone deathly ill. Be right back.
Secondhand smoke contains hydrogen cyanide and other deadly gases.
What a guy.
Oh, he is a keeper.
Don't pass gas. Take it outside. GetTheFactsAtDon'tPassGas.org. A message from the Ad Council and the American Legacy Foundation.
FD Element helps clients use communications to seize emerging opportunities in sustainability and issue advocacy. We do it through the power of creative, integrated communication efforts built on decades of experience helping clients win in a changing world. More than ever, companies are understanding the business case for sustainability as a way to cut costs, increase market share, limit risk, and improve employee alignment. FD Element has helped some of North America's leading brands do just that. Working from offices in New York, Vancouver, and Washington, D.C., FD Element develops customized campaigns grounded in unmatched thought leadership and executed with sound strategy, clear messages, and high-impact communication. To learn more, visit www.fdelement.com. That's www.fdelement.com for the best communication services for businesses with an eye on the advantages of sustainability.
At the Green Talk Network, our experts want to hear your voice. Do you have a question or comment for our hosts? Call us toll-free, 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. The Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You're listening to Green Economy News, brought to you by FD Element, with Don Miller and Grant Draper. If you have a question or comment about this week's program, call in now, toll-free at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. Or send an email to dan@theelementagency.com. Now, back to Green Economy News, brought to you by FD Element.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dan Giacomini. We're talking here with Tim Tillien-Lawton. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about, obviously the legislation, the energy bill that's going on right now in the House and the Senate. Tim, I'd like to maybe get a little bit more of your thoughts on sort of the prospect for getting particularly cap and trade passed by the end of the year. I mean, we have Pelosi saying that it's going to happen, and then obviously retracting her statements quickly thereafter. So what's the deal? I mean, is this gonna come in 2009, or more importantly, before Copenhagen?
Right, and that's what we're all hoping for, and that's what we're all fighting for. I am optimistic, but no one really knows for sure whether it'll happen this year or not. But mm-hmm. What we do know is that what I can tell you from here on Capitol Hill is that Chairman Waxman and Markey, who are the ones that are really spearheading this effort in their committee, have been engaging in ongoing dialogue with a lot of the moderate Democrats on their committee, a lot of whom are from those coal districts that I mentioned earlier. And they've been having really productive talks. A lot of people, and including some Republicans, are really staying engaged on this issue, which is really important to be able to actually dialogue and negotiate any changes that need to happen in order to get full support of this bill. So I'm definitely optimistic that we'll hit Chairman Waxman's target of getting it out of committee by Memorial Day, and then from there it goes to the House floor, and then which will actually be easier from our perspective because there's fewer conservative Democrats and more on the House floor, and then from there it goes on to the Senate side. So mm-hmm. From there it gets a little murkier, but at least for the short term, I'm confident that we'll be able to get it out.
And now, in terms of in terms of the congressional support and opposition for something like cap and trade, mm-hmm. where does this? Where is the line in the sand kind of drawn? Is this very much a party issue? Is it like Democrats primarily in support and Republicans primarily against it? Is it more of a geographic thing? Is there any kind of sociological trend going on there?
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly obviously global warming is a nonpartisan issue. It's something that's going to affect everyone in all sectors of the economy.
Sure,
and we like to really emphasize that, and we're trying. I think everyone from President Obama through to our congressional leaders, including Chairman Waxman, have been reaching out to Republicans to really include them on this effort. And some of them have really taken them up on it, including like Mary Bono Mack from California, who's on the Energy and Commerce Committee.
Yeah.
And so there's a fair chance that we're optimistic that we might be able to get her to vote for the bill. But But really, the Republican strategy so far in Congress has really been quite obstructionist. And they, you know, as Rush Limbaugh says, has said, you know, people that are, that they might look best if Obama fails. And so, unfortunately, some of the more conservative Republicans are more intent on sort of stopping the Democratic agenda and Obama's agenda, which includes solving global warming, than they are about, you know, actually passing good legislation. And so to this point, we've seen a lot of sort of straight party line voting. Mm-hmm. And I expect that there's only going to be a couple people that switch sides on the committee votes. But then once you get out to the House floor, I hope to see a lot more people that are, you know, really, you know, because there are a lot of Republicans that acknowledge that global warming is a big problem and we have to do something about it. And so I think you'll see a few more Republicans pick up the vote on the House floor.
Hey, Tim, thanks a lot for joining us. If you're interested in listening, or excuse me, learning more about Tim Tallien-Lawton's work and his colleagues there at Environment America, you can visit environmentamerica.org. If you're more if you're interested as well in learning more about green business trends and what's going on in the green economy, you can visit mygreenelement.com. That's our corporate blog here at FD Element. We are now going to transition from the political world to the business world, which, as we know, are increasingly synced up and increasingly in line with each other. Grant, do you want to take a second and introduce our next guest?
Sure. Thanks, Don. Our first guest today, well, should have been our first guest today. Unfortunately, we had some technical issues, is Bruce Usher. Bruce joined EcoSecurities in 2003 as their chief executive officer, and since then has been responsible for their overall strategy development. He's got years of trading experience under his belt and has served in a number of investment banks, including the Williams Capital Group and Lehman Brothers. For the past 2 years, he has taught a course on finance and sustainability at my alma mater, Columbia University, and he'll be teaching it again this fall. Bruce is also Columbia University's representative to the United Nations Global Compact Initiative on Integrating Sustainability and Equity Research. Bruce, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, nice to be here.
Great. Well, let's start with you know, a pretty straightforward question for our listeners. Can you tell us a little bit about the nuts and bolts of carbon trading and how EcoSecurities fits into it all?
Certainly. The objective of carbon trading is to reduce emissions of greenhouse gases at the lowest cost. That's what it's all about. And the one of the interesting things about climate change is that the source of the greenhouse gas emission is irrelevant. It doesn't really matter which country or which place it comes from. It all has the same impact up in the atmosphere. So through carbon trading, what we're trying to do is reduce emissions wherever it's cheapest, and in return for doing so, get a credit, which can be used where it's more expensive to reduce emissions. For example, it doesn't cost that much to reduce emissions from a landfill in Brazil. It's a fairly low investment to do that, and then sell a credit in a country like Japan, where reducing emissions is very expensive. In fact, the rule of thumb is it costs about one-third the price to reduce an emission in a developing country as it does in the developed world. Our role at EcoSecurities is first to find the projects, almost exclusively in developing countries. We've worked on projects in close to 40 countries now. Secondly, we invest in the process for developing the project and getting the project approved under the terms of the Kyoto Protocol, which is a very difficult and long process. And third and lastly, we purchase the credits that come out of the project, and we sell those to companies and countries in Europe and Japan.
Now, Bruce, EcoSecurities has experience with projects in a wide range of sectors, including renewable energy, agriculture and urban waste management, industrial efficiency, and even forestry. Now, my question would be, what criteria does the group have when deciding whether or not to engage in an actual project?
There's really two sets of criteria. The first is, will it qualify under the strict terms of the Kyoto Protocol? It's, as I mentioned before, it's a very tough process, and we first have to determine whether it qualifies. We have a team of about 100 people who work exclusively on that process. And the second issue we need to address is, will the project be commercially viable? Will it produce enough greenhouse gas emission reductions between now and 2012 to be commercially viable? And 2012 is important because that's when the Kyoto Protocol is currently set to expire.
That's interesting, Bruce. Can you just tell our listeners about a couple of projects that perhaps they would be interested in that they wouldn't expect?
It's hard to say what one expect. I can tell you about a few that are notable. The first project ever to get approved under the Term Security Protocol in the world was a eco-securities project. Today we have about 140 projects approved, or about 10% of all the projects in the world today. It was a landfill in Brazil. I mentioned earlier Brazil. What's interesting about this is most landfills in the developing world today are not regulated. They're not capped, which means the emissions escape from those landfills into the atmosphere. Now, that's not such a big problem if one doesn't care about methane emissions. It doesn't really bother anybody locally. But it's very damaging to the atmosphere in terms of the greenhouse gas. And we worked with that project in Brazil. This goes back to when I started with the company back in 2002, so it was one of the first projects. And it was the first one to be approved and registered under the UN. And what's interesting about it is it's really very straightforward. I mean, this sort of technology is widely in use in the U.S. Most major landfills here already employ similar technology to capture the methane gas. But it's not used in developing countries. And transferring that technology and making those investments is really, really pretty straightforward. And what's neat about it is that carbon trading provides a mechanism for this sort of investment to take place.
That's great. Now let me try to ask you a little to think differently here in terms of, say, the project in Brazil. Which project would you point to has probably been one of the biggest challenges, whether it's in getting the approval done or even and actually having it implemented?
I laugh because there's been a lot of tough projects. It's a new market and people are trying to work out the mechanisms. I think one of the, an example, I'll tell a little story that fits the project. A hydro project in Honduras that we worked on, a small hydro project. It's about 12 megawatts. We did all the approval process with the UN and got all the paperwork in place, which is, as I mentioned earlier, it's very long. It takes about a year or two to get that done. And the project was designed to develop 12 megawatts worth of electricity. And the entrepreneur who owned it, while we were doing the paperwork with the UN, very, very smart, capable guy, he managed to fit a 12.8 megawatt turbine into the space. He figured out a way to do it so that it would produce more clean, renewable energy than it was originally planned for, which is a good thing. And when the project was finished, there's an auditing process that's required, a very, very tough auditing process. And the auditors went in and measured it and then reported back to the UN. And what they reported was that it is a 12.8 megawatt project. And our paperwork had said it was a 12 megawatt project. So the credits were rejected by the UN. They said, the numbers aren't right, and we're rejecting them. To which our response was, well, no, we understand that the project's better than it was designed. Did a better job. And the reason I mention this as sort of an example of the challenge of this is it took a long time to sort it out. We did eventually sort it out, and the credits were eventually issued to the project and to EcoSecurities. But it's an example of when you're in a new market and you try to structure the first time around, there's always challenges and always hurdles. And everyone wants to make sure this works and works properly, and sometimes as a result you get would seem to be rather irrational decisions that are made at that time. People need to understand the best way to make the market work.
Well, yeah, and in any market, I think you sometimes have what looks like irrational decisions going on and a high level of unpredictability. Bruce, we're going to ask you to stay on the line. We're going to go to a commercial break now. But thanks very much for joining us here on Green Economy News. Thank you.
At the Green Talk Network, our experts want to hear your voice. Do you have a question or comment for our hosts? Call us toll-free, 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. The Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
Amanda, age 3. Tyler, age 8. Marissa, age 4.5.
We could tell you just how many child abductions last year led to Amber Alerts, but this isn't about cold statistics. It's about saving kids.
Shaniqua, age 14.
To get free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. When an alert is issued in your area, you'll receive it as a free text message. Wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You need to know how to keep your family safe. We'll help you do that with the Keeping Your Family Safe radio program. These days, there are all sorts of concerns being brought to the forefront about environmental and safety hazards in the homes we live in. You might not even know what lies underneath the roof and within the walls. Angelo Garcia III, an expert on indoor air quality and safety consulting, will take you inside your home and help you and your family stay secure. Keeping Your Family Safe airs Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Green Talk Network.
FD Element helps clients use communications to seize emerging opportunities in sustainability and issue advocacy. We do it through the power of creative, integrated communication efforts built on decades of experience helping clients win in a changing world. More than ever, companies are understanding the business case for sustainability as a way to cut costs, increase market share, limit risk, and improve employee alignment. FD Element has helped some of North America's leading brands do just that. Working from offices in New York, Vancouver, and Washington, D.C., FD Element develops customized campaigns grounded in unmatched thought leadership and executed with sound strategy, clear messages, and high-impact communication. To learn more, visit www.fdelement.com. That's www.fdelement.com for the best communication services for businesses with an eye on the advantages of sustainability.
Learn how to become a part of the solution, not the problem. Join in the discussion by calling 1-888-346-9141. That's toll free, 1-888-346-9141. Welcome to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You're listening to Green Economy News, brought to you by FD Element, with Don Miller and Grant Draper. If you have a question or comment about this week's program, call in now, toll-free at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. Or send an email to dan@theelementagency.com. Now, back to Green Economy News, brought to you by FD Element.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm FD Element Cheryl Mahalan, and we're back with Bruce Usher. So, Bruce, my first question would be, now what happens to the clean development mechanism, carbon credits, when 2012 arrives and the Kyoto Protocol actually expires?
Honestly, we don't know. We expect that there will be an international grant push in 2012. The issue of climate change is certainly not going away. In fact, if anything, it's getting more serious every year that goes by. And we expect that either the Kyoto will get extended, and there's good probability of that, into what they call a second commitment period, or that there will be new agreements, perhaps a U.S.-driven international agreement or a number of different regional agreements. And secondly, I think it's quite likely that carbon credits will be included in any new agreement because it's simply good economics. I mentioned earlier that the cost of developing a project in an emerging country is about one-third the cost in a developed country. And it just makes good economic sense for everyone to encourage that. And therefore, carbon credits will likely be part of whatever happens after 2012.
Now, Bruce, your company is one of the largest traders of carbon credits under the Kyoto Protocol. How did EcoSecurities position itself to be on top of things here?
Well, first of all, we were one of the first out of the gate. The company was founded in 1997. In fact, it was founded shortly before the Kyoto Protocol was agreed. So we're one of the early players, and that's always a good start. We've been very aggressive in terms of expanding globally. We have offices in more than 20 countries today, and each of those offices are entirely local teams. So we have two offices in China. It's entirely Chinese staff. I could say the same in a Brazilian office or Indonesian office and so on. And these are very, very dedicated, committed people both to the issues of climate change and projects of reducing emissions of greenhouse gases. I think we have good local teams with great people, and we got an early start.
Now, Bruce, how has the recession affected the carbon trading market?
Well, prices of credits have come down, which is what you would expect because emissions have come down. keep in mind that greenhouse gas emissions mostly stem from economic activity, producing power, producing steel, cement. Activities like this produce greenhouse gas emissions. And as economies have slowed, emissions have slowed. As emissions slowed, the need for credits has slowed, and prices have come down. And that's the way it should be. I mean, these are market-based mechanisms, and we would expect this, as the market slows, that the price will come down. And I think that's a good thing. As we get through the recession, at some point we will, and economies recover, we expect prices to go back up.
How much, Bruce, would you say that what the federal government does, and even perhaps at the state level in terms of promising emissions limits, does to affect the carbon trading market?
Well, you used the word promising. I will say that promises count for little, to be blunt about it. What the government actually legislates is extraordinarily important. In fact, it's only through government legislation or international treaties that we can really put these markets really into place in the proper way. And at the, what's being done at the state level has been very important. What's done in California in the Northeast, it's called the REGI market in the Northeast, has helped get things going here in the U.S., but at the end of the day, we really need federal legislation.
And what about the voluntary trading
Sorry, go
market?
Ahead. Yep. You were asking about the voluntary market. So voluntary market does not require legislation, of course. It's purely voluntary. And it's an important part of the puzzle. I think people or businesses voluntarily reducing emissions certainly helps. At the end of the day, though, in order to really tackle climate change, the amount of reductions that are required absolutely require binding commitments by governments to get industry to reduce emissions.
Thanks a lot, Bruce, and thanks a lot for joining us. Do you have a web address where people can go to learn more about your company?
Yeah, it's simply ecosecurities.com.
Ecosecurities.com. And Bruce Usher joined us today to talk about carbon trading. And prior to that, we had a gentleman from Environment America discussing operations on the Hill and what's going on the Hill. What's interesting is to see the world of politics and finance on one hand kind of colliding with each other, but on the other hand working things out organically as we move into a new economy. Earlier this week, I think there are two specific things that are of interest. One is this meeting that was referenced earlier of 16 countries getting together in Washington. What's interesting to me is no drama. Obama was back. This was a situation where you had no grandstanding. You didn't really have much in the way of protesting either from the business community or the environmental community, but you had people starting to work towards a solution. And I think the one piece that people need to keep in mind as they look at the Waxman bill and the Senate legislation that will follow on from there is the EPA decision, the endangerment finding around greenhouse gas emissions, meaning that the administration is still in a position, they would assert, to regulate the cap part of the cap and trade. And that's something that's kind of hanging over the entire discussion and very interesting. So, Grant, do you have anything to add?
No, I think the moves on the Hill and Capitol Hill in Congress, particularly by the Republican members on the Waxman-Markey bill, would indicate that the government's regulatory side on the cap side with the EPA ruling has an effect, because they are mounting an effective opposition to the bill, and it's become really a center point for not only the Obama administration but also for Congress, and I think will continue as votes start next week.
So thanks a lot for joining us, people. This is Don Miller with Grant Draper, Cheryl Mahalan, and Dan Giacomini from FD Element. If you're interested in learning out a bit more about our company, we're at fdelement.com on the internet. More information about the issues and the kind of things we discuss here on Green Economy News can be found on mygreenelement.com. So in the meantime, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Same channel, same time. Until then, keep green and informed.
Thank you for tuning in to Green Economy News, brought to you by FD Element with Don Miller and Grant Draper. Please join us again next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, right here on the Green Talk Network.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Green Talk Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit thegreentalknetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.